I'm Christopher Lydon. Good morning, Jamaica. Tell Me About It continues. I'll be your guest host until 2 o'clock this morning. Books are our theme this morning. New books, old books, prose, poetry, fiction, history. But books of Caribbean interest, Caribbean significance. The world citizen from Trinidad, V.S. Naipaul, has just taken the Nobel Prize for Literature. Not a decade after Derek Walcott of St. Lucia won the Nobel for his poetry. So for sure the Caribbean counts in the literature of the English-speaking universe, way out of proportion to its population. But just what Caribbean and Jamaican writing counts for keeps changing, decade to decade, writer to writer, against the changing backdrop of colonialism, independence, exile, Afrocentrism, pro- and anti-Americanism, feminism, politics, right and left. Listeners, readers, callers, here's the question we'll come back to again and again. On your Christmas shopping list or your Christmas book list, is there a book that you're dead set on sharing this year? Doesn't have to be a brand new one. Could be a grand oldie. And would you tell me about it in the next couple of hours? Our guests tonight are the performance poet Richard Dingwall, known as Dingo, and the novelist Colin Channer of Waiting in Vain fame. His new novella is called I'm Still Waiting. The title from the Delroy Wilson song of the 1970s. Give them and us a call. The phone is 926-2178 or 926-7615 or 926-8631. Or the toll-free 888-991-2080. We've got two threads tonight we've got to keep track of. There's the written word and the spoken word. Dingo, you're out of the spoken word performance tradition. And you work into songwriting, too. You're well-known on RJR. You're well-known in Jamaica. I wish you'd give me and the Internet listeners back in the States who followed us down here a little taste of Dingo. He's warming up.
Good night, Jamaica, and good night, world. What kind of vibe should I drop? I'm going to do a little piece called The Movie. If my mind was a screen, you would have screamed from the horror flick where I show. The drama, the intrigue, the suspense, the suspended existence of ghetto youth in limbo under the big stick. But some fiend would have preferred if it stayed upon the screen, couldn't believe what I'm seeing. Not in the glorious land them live in. Can't call a spade, cause them not like where it digging. The saga ensues, but turn down the volume low. We know I'm in a whole heap of noise. Street youth, I get seduced by some well-to-do guys. I witness sophisticated prostitution by a woman who have a juggle couple man cause our pay done upon the rent. At the nature of the beast, unrequested mercy killing by the police on behalf of society. In a land with too many living at the rain and too few live at the end of the rainbow, the violence was destined to erupt. The cup couldn't hold no more, the floor fall through upon a system built on incompetence and greed. So some leader in them house start feel uneasy, cause the violence which was always on TV was now just outside. But Marjorie, this thing getting serious, man. So them go up on the radio and make an appeal, so them understand the cause, but we break the laws. Them get little applause. Look how long them handing in my pocket. Them no shoulda know me have bars. Make a man life unbearable, you devalue your own. Playing Russian roulette with a fully loaded gun. With them handout mentality, them teach people for beg. No man a scream, give me liberty or give me bread. Still, we know violence is not a cure, it's a topical solution. But sometimes the end justifies the means when you mean to end the unjust. So the road them block, them loot some shop, the PM get flop, a pregnant woman get dropped, and tourism get a blow. Hey, calm down, man, it's just a movie, you know. A movie, you know.
Amen. Dingo, thank you. What's the name of that piece?
It's called The Movie.
The Movie. Mm. I want to know where we're coming from, and where all of that comes from, where spoken word comes from in this case. We've heard of Louise Bennett in the States, and I've had the pleasure of talking on the phone with Joan Andrea Hutchinson and Amina Blackwood Meeks, who do folk monologues, social commentary, mm-hmm. sometimes funny, sometimes bittersweet. Where does your own work come from, Dingo?
I don't know. I personally, I love the storytellers, you know. I love the people who can just take you away, you just sit and you listen to them and you spellbound. It's like, you know, you can just drift off to that place.
Like your friend Shakespeare. Talk about him. I want to know where Jamaicans get their literature. How much of it comes from Shakespeare? How much of it comes from BET? How much of it comes from the daily newspaper?
Well, you know what? With the infiltration of things like cable and satellite TV, is like, you're right, BET is like a new standard. It's a benchmark now for a whole heap of things. Good sometimes, and sometimes very unfortunate, you know.
I worry about these initials. BET, CNN, KFC. They're taking over, man. Emily, I put this to all the listeners on Tell Me About It. I want to hear people talk about the books they'd kill and die for, the books they're giving away, the books they hope somebody will give them this Christmas. Three for a Desert Island. And I wanted to ask you the same thing, Emily. If you were putting three books about the Caribbean in a time capsule that mean something to you, that tell the truth about the world you know, what would they be?
I was thinking, maybe I don't read enough Caribbean of late, but certainly George Lamming's In the Castle of My Skin. I haven't read yours yet. I'm extremely sorry, my darling, Colin. George Lamming really sticks out. And I think, even though I can't really recapture exactly what the novel is saying, all of it, I just remember where George Lamming said, it doesn't matter how much people know you. I'm not quoting verbatim now. But he's saying that they will never know the true you that is hidden somewhere in the castle of your skin. And I always remember that particular line standing out in my mind. I'd also go for Erna Broadbent's Jane and Louisa Will Soon Come Home. And these are all novels that I did at the university. And I would go for Lucy as well. I can't seem to remember the whole essence of all of them, but there's something about them which I believe informs my whole existence here and now. I've learned so much, even though I can't recapture exactly what is it that's in the text. And if I can go to Africa as well, I remember Ngugi, there's a text, A Grain of Wheat, by Ngugi wa Thiong'o. Extremely good text. And I'd always say that if I were to go to a mountaintop, I believe I'd take that one with me. And if we're going for Shakespeare, then I'd go for certainly the Pound of Flesh story, or Hamlet. Hamlet is my favorite, I believe. I used to just get up and recite Hamlet's soliloquy in class in sixth form. I believe it's a reflection as well of my teacher, because I think she had a great way of bringing the message across. So those are really my chosen ones. I really won't have to choose. I don't want to have to choose between, you know, any of them.
Yeah. That's beautiful. 926-2178 or 926-7615. Or you can call on the toll-free number 888-991-2080. Colin Channer, welcome. Welcome back to Jamaica.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome to Tell Me About It. You and I are acquainted on the radio, it turns out, and I'm acquainted with your writing and the vitality of it. I've just finished reading the new novella called I'm Still Waiting, and I'm still in the grip of it, as well as Waiting in Vain. I want to hear all night about what formed you, but I'd love you to talk about three books for the mountaintop, as Emily said, or the desert island. Three books that you think are true.
C.L.R. James is Beyond the Boundary.
Amen. That was on my list. You stole mine.
Which is such a great sort of left of center examination of the evolution of Caribbean politics and culture framed by cricket. You know, and, you know, James was just such a brilliant man, such a kind of integrated scholar, the kind of scholar that we really have today because everyone is a specialist. So Beyond the Boundary. And also Beyond the Boundary would, Beyond the Boundary covers sports as well, so that's good. Second is Derek Walcott's Omarus, because Omarus is such a big, muscular, almost symphonic work of poetry. And in it, Walcott places the Caribbean at the center of a narrative that, you know, the Trojan War. And I think that it's Walcott's greatest work, and Walcott is the greatest writer from the region. And I think I would take Waiting in Vain, my book. And the reason I would take Waiting in Vain...
You and I are going to have the same list. do we cheat?
No, I would take Waiting in Vain, my book, because I think that with time, every writer looks at his first novel and tries to fix it. And so if I were going to be on the top of a mountain for a long time, I'd read and reread that book and come up with some solutions to things.
If there's anybody in Jamaica who hasn't read this book, you better tell them roughly what it's about.
Waiting in Vain is set in New York, London, and Jamaica, and it's a story of two writers who meet by chance in New York and end up having a transatlantic involvement. So it's very much a reggae novel, a novel informed by reggae. And
we got to talk about that. Reggae. People talk about you as the reggae novelist.
Yeah.
We got to figure out what that means.
Yeah.
Dingo, do you know what it means to call him the reggae novelist? The reggae novelist?
I'm not sure. I'm waiting to find out.
Well, he can tell
us. I've heard him play the drum, though.
Is he good?
Yeah, he's pretty good on the drum.
Can I just say, if I were, you know, to answer my own question, this is cheating a little bit, but I would just say, first of all, to throw in as one entry the Penguin Book of Caribbean Short Stories and the Oxford Book of Caribbean Short Stories. They're both full of, you'd call them all the usual suspects, I suppose, but some wonderful story writers, Roger Mace, Sam Selvin, C.L.R. James is a story writer about Trinidad, is a wonderful, wonderful fiction man. Edwige Dantica, whom we've had on the radio in the States from Haiti, is a wonderful writer. Ernest Hemingway doesn't make it into these anthologies, but he almost could as a Caribbean writer.
Sure.
Cuba's most famous writer. Mm-hmm. Then second, I was going to say definitely Colin Chaner, Waiting in Vain. Tremendous energy, tremendous style. And then working backwards, I would say C.L.R. James' Beyond the Boundary, too. That blows my mind. There was a completely Trinidadian, black, new world, radical spirit inside a Victorian, Edwardian education, which he had completely mastered. He had read Thackeray's Vanity Fair innumerable times before he left high school, and who completely bought the ideology and the culture of cricket and made it the rule of his life, but never let it control him. I mean, he could see through the mistake to the underlying reality, but he kept the discipline, the restraint, the loyalty, the essential values of that British education, and made it work in a new mode. Of course, I don't know anything about cricket, but it's a beautiful, beautiful book. I'd like to hear from callers about what you're reading and what you love to talk about, what books you want to get for Christmas. 9262178 is one of the lines, 9267615, or the toll free 888-991-2080. Good morning, you're on Tell Me About It. Thanks
for
calling. Good morning to you, sir.
Yeah. I've been listening to you with speaking in a foreign accent. I do not understand clearly what you said, but I wish to relate as a senior citizen who was born in the 20s. I wish to relate a English poem which I read as a boy in school. I was born in the 1920s. And the book is about an English writer who writes a poem called Old King Time. Time as it's written in the clock on the radio. I wish to relay one paragraph of it. It said, Old King Time said, as I grow old, I remember it vividly in my memory. Old King Time said, who laugh at my power? The young and the gay. But they dream at hope closely, I track their way. Wait till their first bright sons have run, and they will not smile at what time I've done. And that poem let me grow old gratefully. It's a longer poem, but it is the concluding verse I repeat.
You're a well-educated man. And
I am a non-advanced elementary scholar, senior citizen. But my memory served me well. I happen to be in a return citizen, and it is alleged that the winter in England put water in my head. Why I speak like that? The Lord stay with you. I can hardly understand your foreign accent, but I take it like you are a Cockney or a Birmingham.
You're a good man. You are a well-educated man. Do you have a thought for Dingo or Colin?
Can you repeat that for me?
No. I just wondered if you had a thought or a comment for our guests.
You're a guest.
Yeah. They admire you. We'll leave it there. Thank you for calling.
And thank you too.
And a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you, my brother.
Yes, and birthday. Yes, my New Year Day is my birthday.
Happy birthday too, then.
Pardon me?
I say happy birthday too.
Thank you.
Bless you, man. Thank you. Good morning. You're on Tell Me About It.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. We're talking about books.
Yeah, you know. Welcome to Jamaica. And,
thank you.
Hello, I'm calling you from your hometown still, but this is one of the internet listeners that you spoke about.
And now, where are you right now?
I'm in New York City right now.
Oh, bless you.
You know, I just say they are.
That's known as right Colin Channer's town.
In Chinatown, no, and I'm in Queens.
Okay.
I'm at the border. I'm right on the border, Nassau and Queens. A nice little village called Kimbright.
What do you recommend as books that tell the truth about Jamaica?
Well, about 27 years ago, I read Stan Grant, My Mother Who Fathered Me. And, you know, I think it's an appropriate book for the West Indies because it relates so much to the West Indies, in our whole, especially Jamaica, where, you know, a lot of us men who grew up without our fathers, we were kind of angry to mothers, you know what I mean, because we love them in one way, but we were angry at them for the father not there. But when Stan Grant explained to us what happened, then we could put it in context and the reverse took place, whereby we didn't see our mothers as driving away the fathers, but we saw our mothers as taking up a role which was left by the fathers. So I would recommend that. I think that book is about maybe 30, 35 years old.
I wonder if our man Colin Channel wants to comment. Do you know the book, Colin?
Yes, a very good book.
Yeah.
My
Mother Who Fathered Me. It's a potent book, especially for West Indies and Jamaica in particular, where we see so much of the mothers fathering, play the role of fathers and mothers. So that is I have not been reading much West Indian writing, I must confess, over the last 20 years, but, you know, it's something probably we need to probably go back to, you know, start pick up, you know. I hear one and twenty, a couple of nights ago, I hear some of the new poets are coming up on the program, and it was refreshing, so this may be something where we need to
Thank you, and greetings to New York. I want to ask...
Enjoy Jamaica.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy Jamaica, all right?
We're enjoying it enormously. Thank you, brother.
I know.
Dingo, I wonder if you'd give us another piece.
On the softer side?
Sure.
You are my queen, the difference between a tormented heart and eternal joy. You make this boy want be a better man. No halo, but I know if I should have hurt you or wronged you in any way, it would be my loss, my cross to carry. So marry me and take this heart to bliss from the abyss of this soul. I can tell this is real. Love is blind, but it can feel. I live for the reasoning. Sunday evening, your head on my chest, the best time of my life was under that tree. You be that smell. That smell. That smell that stirs memories of warm Februarys as our poor spring tributaries. Converting spines to river courses that forces minds from their shells. You be that smell. A smell that I can taste like the marmalade in jars on my grandma's shelf. I know say I couldn't live without you, but I know say, baby, having loved you make this life worthwhile. If seeds come to fruition and Jah bless this union and take this raft ashore, rest assured I'll be right there. Because I believe. I believe. Yeah.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Dingo. That's it's wonderful to hear. I want to know everything about it. Who are your favorite storytellers out there? Who did you learn from? Who do you learn from every day?
Well, like you mentioned, Louise. People like Louise, Muta Baruka. Aminas to stuff to is really just off the wall.
Why do you have this in Jamaica and we don't have this in the States? Colin, you know the States as well as I do. What's the equivalent? This is somewhere between written literature and music and singing. What is the equivalent in our in New York?
Well, in New York, it would be something like, well, in New York, there's a whole performance poetry scene. As a matter of fact, on December 14th, HBO is premiering deaf poetry. So there's a whole performance poetry scene that goes on in the States. In New York, for example, at the New Yorican Poets Cafe. And there's also, you know, you go back to the 60s to people like Amiri Baraka, and people like, you know, Allen Ginsberg.
Absolutely,
know?
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
And yet it's on this small island, it's a kind of a big industry, much bigger than in the States.
Yeah, there's something here called dub poetry, which started evolving in the early 70s at the Jamaica School of Drama. And it was poetry recited or performed to reggae music. And you would use an instrumental version of a reggae song, mm-hmm. and the poet would chant over it. But Jamaica has a very long tradition of spoken word and music, going back to the DJ tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the spoken word community in Jamaica, you have a couple of currents. One is the old DJ tradition,
mm-hmm.
Which started in the 50s and 60s. Then on top of that, you have the dub poetry phenomenon, which started up in the late 70s. And now, you know, you're having a fairly even cultural exchange between Jamaica and the United States. So the U.S. performance poetry scene is coming to Jamaica with returning residents over the internet, on records, and also on cable.
Wow. We got to talk about all of it. That's another sort of reggae connection we got to search out, too. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about favorite books, best books of the Caribbean, best Jamaican books, books you're reading, books you want to recommend, books that have changed your life and shaped your taste. Our phones are 926-2178 or 926-7615 or 926-8631. We'll be back talking about books on Tell Me About It.
This is the time of year for giving, sharing, and having lots of fun. Hi, I'm Doreen, and I'm appealing to you to remember the less fortunate, especially the children, and give love this holiday season. Share in the spirit of love and extend a hand or two if you can. Happy holidays, Jamaica, and keep it locked in RGR 94FM.
The big one, the 4-in-1 special, the quad-pack combo advertising package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share, and a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share. Advertisers, the quad-pack combo advertising package gives you reach and frequency at an affordable rate too. In other words, you're getting the... The quad-pack combo, RGR 94 FM, TVJ. Fame FM, Radio 2 FM. Advertising has never been so easy. Advertising has never been so affordable. Give us a call today at 926-1100 and ask for our dynamic marketing department. Over now.
Weekdays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., you get direct access to RJR's hotline, interactive and ear-friendly radio. We pride ourselves in never speaking over your heads or down to you. Come back to your senses, where sensible and sensitivity are hallmark words that have made us talk radio's consistent number one. Call us on 926-2178, 926-8631, 926-7615, or 1-888-991-2080. Toll free, Mondays to Fridays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. And to share your views and concerns. We speak simple language and non-confrontational talk. That's RJR's Hotline with Barbara Gludon and Keith Smith. We don't just talk to you. We talk with you. DBJ.
Now each day, RJR 94 FM will bring listeners a live simulcast of TVJ's Primetime News Hour, including primetime news, sports and weather at 7 p.m. daily on the AM frequencies. This service is another part of our continued quest to offer added value to both our listeners and advertisers. So, for those discerning listeners who, for one reason or another, may not be able to watch news on TVJ, at 7 p.m., welcome to TVJ's Primetime News Hour, daily on the AM frequencies, 720 from Kingston, 550 from Montego Bay, 580 in Port Maria, and 770 from Mandeville.
On Saturday, December 15, the Sunshine Suite, in association with Lasco Foods and Lasco Distributors, will host breakfast for the youth of the St. Anthony Children's Home, 8 Dillsbury Avenue, Kingston 6. You can share in this live broadcast by offering your help in the following ways. Donate a gift suitable for age 2 to age 18. Volunteer to serve breakfast to the children. And if you're creative in planning and organizing games for children, then volunteer your service. The children will love you for it. You may place your gifts in these special Christmas barrels here at RJR 32 Lindis Road. And to volunteer your time and service, call Tanya Powell Edwards at 926-1100 tonight between 7 and 8 a.m. and 4 and 5 p.m. The Sunshine Suite shares breakfast with the children of St. Anthony Children's Home Saturday morning, December 15, from 6 to 9. For as much as you serve the least of my brethren, you do it to me.
Very good, my darlings.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Tell Me About It. We're talking about the written word, the spoken word, and books. Books you want to force on other people, make them read, and enjoy the way you did them. 926-7615 is one of our phones, or 926-8631. Colin Channer is back home for Christmas in Jamaica. He's a best-selling writer in the States and in Jamaica on themes that go everywhere that Jamaicans go, which is all around the world, but most particularly in his case, New York, London, and Kingston. Colin Channer, welcome back. I want you to talk about what formed your mind as a writer, the books that you fed on as a schoolboy, the books that you get into as a grown-up in New York.
Well, I think if I should talk about the people who formed me, I have to talk about Shakespeare. Not William Shakespeare, Robbie Shakespeare from Sly and Robbie. Because, you know, I grew up in Kingston in the 1970s when reggae was a really dynamic, vital narrative force. And it was something that music that spoke to me. As a kid, I read very badly. I read on my own Nick Carter, spy novels, Mac Bull and the Executioner. But in school, I was reading the good stuff that I'd come to appreciate later on. The first book that meant something to me was a book called Emil and the Detectives. It was a German book. Mm. I can't remember the author. And later on, plays, Pygmalion.
Mm.
Because Pygmalion was about class conflict. And, you know, I was living in a country that has been in class conflict since the first slaves arrived. And that book meant something to me. E.M. Forster's Where Angels Fear to Tread. I did it in fifth form. And the book stuck with me largely because I didn't read it for the exam. And so I got a B. B was the highest grade I could get because there was one book I didn't read. Later on, when I decided to become a novelist, and that happened in the States, I found myself being drawn to the work of William Kennedy, an Irish-American writer. And what struck me about Kennedy did books like Ironweed and The Ink Truck.
Mm.
And what struck me about Kennedy was that
He's the novelist of Albany, New York.
Yeah, exactly. And what struck me about Kennedy was that Kennedy was able to write about Irish-American people without the foreground being what does it mean to be Irish-American. And that provided me an interesting model because I think that for a writer coming from a small place, there is a tendency to foreground the cultural experience.
Mm.
And so what we have are what critics call an interesting view of a society instead of a great novel, a great story. So William Kennedy, Hemingway, taught me a lot about efficiency and about truth. I remember reading A Farewell to Arms and Movable Feast. Mm-hmm. And what I think is it would have been his greatest book if he'd finished it, The Garden of Eden. You know, reading that work, something, you know, Hemingway speaks the truth to, do you know what? Cut the BS. Get to the heart of the matter. Patrick Chamuzot, Texaco, you know, Solibo the Magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
In Texaco especially, Chamuzot uses the Caribbean oral tradition and carries that voice in a book.
You're a full-fledged literary man and star in New York nowadays. What do you groove on in the New York scene and the American literary world?
Right now?
Yeah.
I'm digging Colson Whitehead. Digging Colson Whitehead a lot. The Intuitionist and, you know, John Henry Days, you know, a very smart young writer. And I think, you know, in New York, what gets me is the diversity of voices.
Yes.
You know, you can go to the Spy Bar, you can go to the New Eureka, and you can hear all these great voices there. Good voices, too.
I want you to talk more about reggae. How reggae formed you. You talk about this narrative force and a moment when Bob Marley, above all, kind of seized the whole world's imagination. What does that have to do with your writing?
Well, you know, in you know the Caribbean, the literary tradition in the English speaking Caribbean, is you know was formed came about largely in response to colonialism, and so we have a great period in the '50s and sixties when writers like Lamming and Mays and Naipaul and Milton Harris were coming up, and they were very strong writers, but the emotional palette of the work was fairly narrow, and this was so because of this big thing hanging over our heads. In reggae music, the emotional palette of reggae is very broad, and that was because reggae was always understood to be a living, breathing art that everyday people would use. In the reggae singer found a way to talk about Jamaica in a way that was universal, and that solved a narrative problem for me. How do I write about this place in a way that somebody in Iowa will get it, in a way that somebody in Saskatchewan will get it, in a way that somebody in Tokyo will get it? And also, reggae found a way in which to create a kind of storytelling art that fused politics with philosophy, with fun. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a sense
and
in
dance.
Reggae, yeah, that you should enjoy. This is something to enjoy it, and also sensuality in Caribbean fiction before. Before the mid '80s, there's very little attempt to engage the sensual, to look at the sexual and romantic dynamics of people. We don't have in the reggae tradition. You have the love song. We didn't have the love story in Caribbean fiction until recently.
That's so interesting. I mean, all of those points are interesting. And one more, if I may add, it made the African connection, and not to West Africa, but to East Africa.
Right.
What does that matter?
Well, the thing is that, you know, what, you know, reggae and Rastafarianism created this very powerful fusion. And in it, you know, I think that every, you know, all great literary traditions have a governing mythology.
Hmm.
You know, if you're talking about the Western literary tradition, we can trace it back to the Greeks. That there is that Rasta and reggae gave us a mythology that was Africa-centered. In that, the idea of Haile Selassie as an Ethiopian king being God created a shift, and that shift created a tension which widened our imaginations and allowed us to integrate into our art sort of non-Western concepts, which I think have enriched this art. But it was still, in many ways, you know, the idea of Ethiopia is interesting because it solve the complication of we were not always Christian. And when you go back to Nigeria or go back to Ghana, you have the problem of once I was a heathen and the slave master saved me, right? And so, you know, Rasta and reggae are important in that respect to the art because, again, it gave us a black-centered mythology that informs our work.
Now, how much of that does inform your work? I mean, these themes, the Jamaican, but also universal, the mix of politics and philosophy and fun and sensuality, which you certainly have in all of your work, the Africa connection. How do you handle these things in prose?
I handle it the way a reggae singer would, which is what a reggae singer said, us do it naturally, which is that, you see, reggae, right, presumes that people don't live life in genres, yeah. Right? And so a reggae album is supposed to have some love music. It's supposed to have some political music. It's supposed to have some spiritual music. If you assume that, then you write these novels that cross boundaries.
I want to come back to all of these themes, but I want to engage the callers too. The phones are 926-2178 or 926-7615 or 926-8631. We're talking about books. Good morning, and thanks for calling. Tell me about it. Welcome.
Yes, I enjoy the program very much.
Well, thank you. Even when I'm on it, you mean?
Pardon me?
Even when I'm on it.
Yes, I enjoy the program.
Well, thank you.
Because I understood clearly what you have been talking about. Books are really very interesting, and the book that leaves a memory with me is the book written by Michael Antoni. The Games Were Coming.
That's a great book.
Yes, that was a great book.
Tell me about it. I don't know the book.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. Tell me about it. I don't know the book.
Oh, you don't know the book. Well, it was like a game which hosts pedal cyclists. And
it was set in Trinidad, right, Carlo?
Yeah, it was written in Trinidad. And I think the book has brought out a story, but it leave you in a suspense. You know, you don't know whether he had won the game or somebody else won it. But the way the book was written, it left an indelible memory of, you know, the liveliness of the Caribbean people.
Mm.
So that was a great book.
You're a great caller. Thank you
very much. And I would like to tell you that I would like to big up Dingo. Mm. Dingo?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a great poet, and he has used the language of the Jamaican people. You know, the language of expression, the language of feeling, emotion, to bring across to the people.
Thank
you know, the true sense of what he's writing about.
On Dingo's behalf, I thank you.
Okay.
Caller, thank
you. I would like to tell you that I am a poet also.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to give us a sample?
Yeah, man, give us a sample.
Yes, I would like to give you a sample. Oh, let me get one. This was like a graduation thing.
Hmm. Okay.
I did it for some graduates, and I would like to give you a stint of it.
Please.
I'm just checking to see if I can locate it very fast. Oh, here we go. This one was entitled Graduation Ifs and Buts. But I won't say the name.
Okay.
Graduation is a very delicate piece of material. You dare not leave it with anyone marginal. You have to press to be in the selection. It's strictly integrity, or you will be in the rejection. Mm-hmm. Wistful and dynamic though you may be, God help you if your conduct cause you to flee, when you'd rather be in a happy glee as you go marching in that long melee. Mm-hmm. Graduation is a great together affair. When every graduate wants to show their glare of the brilliance obtained in this noble institution under laborious and dedicated tuition.
Okay.
Arise, graduates, and discern the big bold world of which you were told about the many and dangerous events over which we often lament. Graduates, alas, you are there. God in heaven knows where to practice what you have been taught. If not, you'll be faced with the great onslaught. Graduates, we the teachers, parents, and well-wishers, do pray that your steps and decisions will not be scorched by life's fires. When you enter into deep concentration, God be praised if you have fulfilled those missions. That's the end.
Caller, thank you. Dingo, you've got a rival out there, man. Caller, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Yes, and I hope the program will continue to blossom and to educate Jamaicans and the world.
Amen.
That
Amen.
Caribbean people are really a force to reckon with.
Amen, we know that.
Okay.
And caller.
Okay, good day.
Hey, one sec.
Yeah?
You should have probably hung out that for them read at some graduation ceremony.
Yes, I did it once at a graduation thing, you know.
Yeah, man.
And it was well accepted.
Mm. All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Dingo,
continue the program.
Thank you. Dingo, I wanted to ask you if what Colin says about the reggae aesthetic, so to speak, applies to you. How much of that, all of those new frameworks affect you?
You mean match the writing style?
Well, it's partly style, it's partly content. It's also the degree to which Jamaican artists in the 1970s could seize control and effect of what they were doing. Bob Marley made his own record company. Mm. The technology is even more flexible now, so that you can a writer, an artist can master the medium as well as the content of what he's saying.
What is interesting about voice is that before reggae, there were two poetic voices in Jamaica. There was Louis Bennett, which was a rural folk voice, and there was the English voice.
Mm-hmm.
Reggae created, because reggae was an herb, wasn't folk, it was pop. The popular voice of Kingston, reggae brought that voice to the forefront. So Dingo does not sound like Louis Bennett when he's using a vernacular Jamaican voice.
Mm.
He's using the voice of reggae, which he does naturally, because Dingo came of age in the 1980s when that voice was already created. Mm. So it's his to use and work with.
Mm.
So a whole artistic problem was solved for Dingo as a poet before he arrived.
Mm-hmm.
If Dingo had been born 20 years earlier, he'd have been in the problem of Claude McKay. How do I write in a way that's true to voice,
mm-hmm,
about universal things? Reggae came and solved that for all of us.
We're going to talk about reggae tomorrow night and in music, so we don't need to anticipate all of it. But I've been wondering if the world, and maybe even Jamaica, is getting reggae'd out I mean, can you see the end of the reggae line? Do we have to reinvent it? People talk about going back to roots and traditional reggae or early reggae. Where are we in the long history of that reggae aesthetic? Or is it going to find itself in the printed word, Colin, do you think, before we find another Marley?
Well, the thing is that, I mean, in the way that, you know, that jazz started out as a music, but then started influencing other art forms, such as film, such as dance, right? Reggae has already started to do some of this already. If you look at dance companies here, like, if you look at the National Dance Theatre Company of Jamaica, for example, mm-hmm. who, as early as, you know, the mid-70s, have started incorporating reggae movements into the company's repertoire. We haven't seen it yet in film. We have reggae as subject in film, for example, in The Harder They Come, and more recently in Dancehall Queen, and Third World, in Dancehall Queen. But it hasn't started shaping film in the way that jazz has shaped film in the States and around the world. You know, it's we're a young country, and reggae is a young music. Reggae, the common agreement is that reggae started in 1967, so it's still evolving, yeah? It's creating offshoots like dancehall. You know, it's creating offshoots like, you know, drum and bass music in Britain, you know, and two-step music, you know? So these are all branches of reggae. But I think that what the most lasting contribution of reggae to literature will be an entrepreneurial spirit. The reggae artist took control.
I'm glad you mentioned it. Absolutely.
Very early. The reggae artist took control of creating their art, of selling their art, of marketing their art very early. And what I'm seeing now in Jamaica are a set of very enterprising young writers who are going out there and making their mark with a certain kind of reggae energy.
I think he's talking about you, Dingo.
But right now we see groups like No Doubt and who's the other group? There's another group. I mean, sampling dancehall stuff, using dancehall artists, and I mean, dancehall is really just one branch of reggae. And as Colin said, and we know, we see the music just channeling into these different avenues, and is really good for the industry.
Colin, I want to change the subject to the content in a certain way, mm-hmm. of your writing, and especially the new novella, mm-hmm. called I'm Still Waiting. Not to give anything away, it's the story of a Chinese Jamaican who grew up as a kid, a sort of studio genius in the 70s, doing everything, keyboards, horn playing, electronics, the works. And he leaves for New York and comes back after 20 years because there's this tremendous pull of that memory that literally drags him back to a kind of loving restoration of a world that he simply couldn't leave, including his wife, mm-hmm. of 20 years earlier. He comes back to a completely different place, and the big movie theater where he'd courted his wife is now a church, and downtown Kingston is a different zone. I want you to talk about that, what it's like for you growing up, having grown up a sort of 80s kid, coming back to the Jamaica in Kingston that he knew.
Well, the thing is that I come back to Jamaica a lot, so I've seen the change progressively over time. You know, Jamaica has changed in many ways for the better and in many ways for the worse. I mean, Jamaica has changed for the better. For example, we now have more radio stations. People can get a wider range of points of view on radio, for example. People can hear a wider range of music. When I was growing up in Jamaica in the 70s, for example, you did not hear as much reggae as you hear now. We heard a lot of Sinatra, a lot of ABBA, a lot of the Jackson 5, right? I think also that there is a stronger presence of black people in the middle class. And nobody can deny that. I think that Jamaicans are much more confident about the significance of their culture around the world. And that's a positive. Another tremendous positive is that I think that that Jamaicans have now understand that it is, this is their country to run, and that their mistakes are their mistakes alone, and that they have to work something out. And so there's a certain kind of energy in a country working out the solutions. On the other hand, it's a much more violent place. You know, political violence has become anarchic almost. You just don't understand why people are killing each other. There are many very rich people and many very poor people. The people that I left here poor are still poor today. You look at places like Riverton City where people literally live in a garbage dump. Places like Kuala Lumpur, those places are still there. The police force has not discovered a way of solving crime without infringing on people's human rights. And I think that we're a lot of the people who, the great people who formed artistic institutions here, are getting old, some are dead, and I don't see the people they mentored coming up to replace them. Dennis Scott, who was, head of the School of Drama, who went to Yale, is dead. Jeffrey Fairweather, who headed the National Chorale, left and went to Juilliard. Rex Nettleford is still working hard, but he's becoming an old man.
Yeah, there are several things here. A lot of the most famous writers have expatriated.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that means. I mean, Naipaul is one special case. Derek Walcott is another. But Olive Senior, Margaret Cesare Thompson,
mm-hmm.
Yourself. So many artists leave. That's less of a problem in my mind than the fact that in your novel, in the new one,
mm-hmm.
Really the most vital place is the downtown below Crossroads, where all those theaters, all that activity, all those studios, all that music thrives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of town that they tell white visitors not even to think about going. And so many black Jamaicans that I know here and in the States say, don't kid yourself about Kingston. Don't go near it. It's been written off. It's this sort of metaphorical moonscape of your childhood.
Yeah.
That's difficult.
Yeah, it's hard. But the thing is that Kingston is a complicated city. And what on the surface looks like a uniformly dangerous place is not.
Of course.
And, the problems of Kingston are really problems of poverty and of young men with little hope having access to guns, I think, though, that I'm an optimist, I think that there are enough bright people committed to Jamaica who will make it work again. But for that to happen, I think that it'll be a great cooperative effort between government, business, and the arts, because I think that the arts create a people's vision of their highest selves.
Yes.
And the more artists that engage that, I think the more people will respond to it.
A lot of people will be glad you're on the case and that you're building an institution. I mean, you're building institutions yourself to give other people a hand in doing what you've done so successfully. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more about books, real books, worthwhile books, valuable books that have touched you about Jamaica and the Caribbean. The phones again, 926-2178, 926-7615, or 926-8631, or the toll-free 888-991-2080. I'm Christopher Lydon, sitting in as a guest host on Tell Me About It. Give us a call. We're talking about books until 2 o'clock. We'll be back.
Weekdays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., you get direct access to RJR's hotline, interactive and ear-friendly radio. We pride ourselves in never speaking over your heads or down to you. Come back to your senses, where sensible and sensitivity are hallmark words that have made us talk radio's consistent number one. Call us on 926-2178, 926-8631, 926-7615, or 1-888-991-2080.
toll-free, Mondays to Fridays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and share your views and concerns. We speak simple language and non-confrontational talk. That's RJR's Hotline with Barbara Gludon and Keith Smith. We don't just talk to you. We talk with you.
On Saturday, December 15, the Sunshine Suite, in association with Lasco Foods and Lasco Distributors, will host breakfast for the youth of the St. Anthony Children's Home, 8 Dillsbury Avenue, Kingston 6. You can share in this live broadcast by offering your help in the following ways. Donate a gift suitable for age 2 to age 18. Volunteer to serve breakfast to the children. And if you're creative in planning and organizing games for children, then volunteer your service. The children will love you for it. You may place your gifts in these special Christmas barrels here at RJR 32 Lindis Road. And to volunteer your time and service, call Tanya Powell Edwards at 926-1100-9 between 7 and 8 a.m. and 4 and 5 p.m. The Sunshine Suite shares breakfast with the children of St. Anthony Children's Home Saturday morning, December 15, from 6 to 9. For as much as you serve the least of my brethren, you do it to me.
Very good, my darlings.
The big one, the 4-in-1 special, the quad-pack combo advertising package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share, and a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share. Advertisers, the quad-pack combo advertising package gives you reach and frequency at an affordable rate too. In other words, you're getting the... The quad-pack combo, RGR 94 FM, TVJ, Fame FM, Radio 2 FM. Advertising has never been so easy. Advertising has never been so affordable. Give us a call today at 926-1100 and ask for our dynamic marketing department. Over now.
It's the season for caring and sharing. This Saturday, December 15, Her Worship the Mayor of Kingston, Councillor Marie Atkins, councillors and officers of the Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation will stage the Mayor's Charity Ball under the distinguished patronage of the Minister of Local Government, Arnold Bertram, and Mrs. Bertram at the Hilton Kingston Hotel, beginning at 7 p.m. RJR 94 FM, Real Jamaican Radio, will bring you coverage of this event between 8 and 11 p.m. Proceeds from the Mayor's Charity Ball will be in aid of the Indigent Dinner Fund. Join me, Norma Brown, for a live broadcast from the Hilton Kingston Hotel. Do share a pleasant evening with us live on Real Jamaican Radio, RJR 94 FM, beginning at 8 p.m.
Hi, Jamaica. Your Paternoster would like to remind you that this is the season for giving, for caring, and sharing. And if nothing else, give love this holiday. And a Happy New Year when it comes from Richie B.
I'm Christopher Lydon, sitting in as the guest host on Tell Me About It. We're talking about books until 2 o'clock in the morning. Books that change your life. Books you want others to know about and enjoy. Good morning. Thanks
good,
for calling.
Good morning to you, Christopher. And how are you this morning?
Very good indeed.
Good, excellent. Good morning to you, Jamaica, and all the beautiful people in the world.
Amen.
Hello, Roger, are you there? Good morning.
Yeah, Roger's there.
Friend. Yes, my friend.
All right, okay. Yeah, I was listening to you guys talking about books. I just love books. I came to realize books hold the wealth of knowledge, and we're not gonna get far if we don't read, because most of what I know comes from books. I love reading self-development books, books that people already made it successful and write their stories.
Okay.
So I can learn the principles of success and other things too. I even love to read dictionary, and I love looking up words to increase my vocabulary.
The dictionary, I was just going to say, the dictionary was Malcolm X's first big book.
Yeah?
And he started at the beginning and he read it to the end, and he, it was his way in prison of overcoming what had been a huge handicap. He didn't know how to read, and he did at the end. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
What books would you like to recommend?
There's one about Norman Vincent Pillay. It's a powerful plus factor. And he's got a range of books that I just love reading. You know, the first one that I read about him that helped to change my life was The Power of Positive Thinking.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, man. Long time, man. Long, long, long time. I was in Canada then, you know. And it started me also to start writing. I started making notes. And eventually, when I read now, I won't write exactly what I see there. I write what I see from within. And I'm always writing. I affirmation myself all the time, because I come to understand that word is the power and I can use it to change myself. So I just write down what I want and will it. Sometimes if I want it instantly, I says I am. I can do all things.
Can I ask you, what's your favorite book about the Caribbean?
I don't have a favorite book about the Caribbean. I just love reading all kinds of books.
Listen, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas. And I'm going to go back to my man.
Yeah, man, no problem. Man.
Yeah, Colin Channer here.
Same to you. May you have a wonderful life.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Thank you. Colin, I wondered, the Observer published its second collection of poems and stories from its art section just this week. It's a very interesting collection of scores of younger and a lot of them novice writers. I was struck by just the vitality of the whole thing in a daily newspaper, but also by the strong thread of violence and sex. We got to deal with them, but there's a feminist agenda that's very, very strong among those writers, and also a kind of despair, it seems to me, about the increasing violence at Kingston. What's to say about all that?
Well, first of all, I want to commend Wayne Brown, who is the editor of the Observer Art Supplement, for starting a writing workshop here outside the university, and also for creating this forum to introduce new writers here in Jamaica to Jamaican people. The thing is that, you know, Jamaica is a very difficult country to live in right now, but I think for many writers, you know, despair and pessimism is a habit, a bad habit, that I think that many people think that you sound deeper if you're pessimistic, but it's actually very difficult to write a joyful poem because if you write a sad poem, you pull on people's emotions.
Here's a curveball. To an American, I keep hearing, in effect, Irish accents in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wondering, it seems to me Jamaica and Ireland have a lot more in common than I ever realized. All of it beginning with this kind of angry love-hate relationship with the British Empire, mm-hmm. going back centuries. But also this acute observation from the margins of empire, mm-hmm. of sort of the mother ship and the mother language. Do you make connections, as well as just a huge, almost unaccountably strong literary energy running through the whole society? Did Jamaican writers make an Irish connection here?
I don't think they overtly do. I think both societies have these parallels that are producing a similar energy. You know, in Ireland, many Irish people, well, until fairly recently, didn't speak English at home. You know, in Jamaica, many people in Jamaica don't speak English at home. We speak our dialect. And I think because of that, we enrich English. And I think we also have the distance from which I think we're also like the Irish. You know, here in Jamaica, here in Jamaica and the rest of the West Indies, we're trying to write ourselves into relevance. You know? And I think, you know, you'll hear the word reggae over and over again.
Mm.
One of reggae's greatest contributions was to write the life of the ordinary Jamaican into relevance. You know, when Bob Marley sang No Woman a Cry, it was a very specific story set in Trenchtown.
Mm.
But, the, you know, that story has found relevance all over the world. So I think the greatest similarity between the Irish writer and the Caribbean writer is this impulse to write oneself into relevance from the margins of empire.
You're in the business of building an institution, a literary school, so to speak. Would you talk about it?
Yeah, I'm the founder and artistic director of, it's a mouthful, the Calabash International Literary Festival.
you did it beautifully.
And we had the first one in Treasure Beach, Jamaica, this past May. It's a three-day festival of live music and live readings by authors, and all events are free and open to the public. And, you know, the first Calabash came off great. Average, each reading had an average audience of about 300 to 400 people. And for Calabash 02, which is next May 24th to 26th in Treasure Beach and Jake's Village, we expect even more people. We're going to have more authors from Jamaica and from outside Jamaica, including Carol Phillips, Sonia Sanchez, Dion Brand, Margaret Cesare Thompson, Patricia Powell, Dingo, who's here, Saul Williams, Thomas Glaive, and some of the great writers of the English-speaking Caribbean from the classic period, George Lamming, Earl Lovelace, Jan Carew, Kamal Brathwaite. We're also going to have Linton Kwesi Johnson. It's going to be very, very hot. And again, all you need is passion and a bus fare, because everything is free and open to the public.
Dingo, does spoken word have an institution? Does it need one?
Before I address that, can I comment on the...
Yes, you may, Mr. Dingo.
No, I was just thinking about books. Since we're discussing books and how crucial reading is, I think a serious part of the problem that we have in Jamaica is just the inability to read, and I mean basic reading. I mean, once you start to become educated, it's all of a sudden you view yourself, your self-esteem gets better, you know what I mean? And you consider certain things beneath you. I figure if you'd have probably pull a roadblock and ask how many people out there can read, or how many people have a job, you know what I mean? You'd realize it is really, as Colin said, a bunch of people who have seen no future and have access to guns. And it's really just a lethal combination. But when you can read, and when you start to see yourself different, and when you start to, you know, reading broadens your mind, and you figure that there's more than this for you, it seriously affects your behavior, you know what I mean? And I mean, I hear people say rising crime in Kingston. I don't know if it's, I mean, the whole country is experiencing rising crime, you understand what I'm saying? But I mean, we have to accept the fact that it's drawing close to that time again. It's election time, man. It's a hand in hand thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like a season, it's like the silly season, you know what I mean? Yeah. But reading is crucial, and I mean just basic reading. And I don't know, I'm open to suggestions about how to get, you know, to get to every ghetto youth to get a book into them hand, but you know, it will seriously affect the future of this country.
And I think it would also affect writers of future generations, because writers begin as readers.
Right.
Correct. And so if people are not reading that much, it's very difficult for them to become writers later on.
Mm-hmm. Dingo, I asked you about a sort of a spoken word institution. Mm-hmm. Do you need one?
Definitely. I figure in Jamaica we have a whole heap of what you can call closet writers. People who... Some people might be bestsellers in New York and don't know. You know what I mean? but they need that exposure. They need to hear people say, yo, that's wicked, you know? And thanks to people like Wayne at The Observer and, you know, creating these forums. The Poetry Society, we meet every last Tuesday at Edna Manley. It's free. All the closet writers come on up. And, you know.
Really, make sure everybody knows about that. Exactly when and where?
It's the last Tuesday of every month at the School of the Visual and Performing Arts. That's Arthur Wynn Drive. And it's free around 7 p.m. 7 to 8 p.m.
People perform.
Anybody can come and perform.
And teach and inspire.
Right, and you can come
and critique or not?
You can critique. There's an open section and where you can be tortured or complain. Yeah, I mean. So is that really?
Has the poetry slam come to Jamaica?
Do you mean the actual slam style of poetry, or you mean if a competition came down?
Competitive, kind of like Olympic scored poetry.
No, that would be really wicked, though. That would be.
You'd do very well, I think. I want to ask you both about connections outside Jamaica. Your novels go to New York and to London, Colin, mm-hmm. But the consciousness also goes to Africa in important ways. I wonder, you know, where does a Jamaican writer see himself now in this world? You're automatically, almost by definition, an international writer mm-hmm. from the first publication. But then where does your loyalty go and your curiosity and your readership and your future?
You know, in the way that, you know, when Woody Allen makes a movie, right, there's a 5% that Gentiles will never understand, right? Right. And so there's a 5% of my novels that non-Jamaicans will never understand. It's very important for me that the people in Kingston and the people in Montego Bay, all over Jamaica, read my work and feel it. At the same time, it is important, and I think that if I write this work with truth and honesty and detail mm-hmm. in a genuine voice, that this work will resonate internationally as well. And this has happened. And so when I'm writing, the person in the crosshairs of my focus is a Jamaican. In the same way that, you know, when, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Hemingway was writing to, you know, a Midwestern American man, you know.
Chicago.
Yeah, you know. And so in America, I'm considered an African-American writer. In Jamaica, I'm considered a local boy done good, you know. In England, I'm considered an American writer. And so I guess, you know, the identity changes depending on where I go.
You know, which do you prefer?
Jamaican, man.
You should hear what he says in London.
Right.
But again, you know, what's your citizenship as a writer? Do you know London writers? Do you know African writers?
Yeah, a lot.
Do you read them?
Yeah, because I do workshops twice a year in Britain. So I'm in London, you know, at least a month out of every year. I read a lot of, I think, outside American writers. I think I read English writers a lot. I read broadly, you know.
Who do you like in London these days?
I like Martin Amis. I like Bernardine Evaristo. I like Zadie Smith. But I also like Ferdinand Dennis, who's a very fine writer who needs much more exposure than he's gotten. You know, I'm also digging a lot of Will Self, who's just a very clever and funny writer. Dig him a lot.
I like Jane Austen.
Oh, you're prude. You know? But I'm also digging, you know, I've always had a soft side for the work of Latin American writers, especially Alejo Carpentier from Cuba. You know, The Chase, Explosion in the Cathedral.
I don't know that name.
Oh, he's actually the father of magic realism.
Before Marquez?
Before Marquez, sure. Yeah, he was the innovator of magic realism, yeah. I dig Marquez a lot, Mario Vargas Llosa a lot. But it all comes down to, you know, to exploration. And, you know, T.S. Eliot said, you know, good writers imitate, great writers steal, you know? And so I want to be a great writer, so I'm stealing from the best writers around the world, reading the book and stealing things.
Plagiarism.
Lots of poetry, Pablo Neruda, Nicholas Guillen. Kwame Dawes, a very fine poet from right here in Jamaica.
Who's in South Carolina now, another
South
expatriate.
South Carolina, sure. Mm-hmm.
What's the pull of Africa at this point? And what is the state of a kind of, you know, literary pan-Africanism?
I don't think it is as important an idea as it used to be in the 70s. I think that when it comes down to it, every writer is a lonely person in front of a blinking cursor or a blank page.
Mm.
And you have to make it work. And I think that the best work comes
when you understand that your individual humanity is a reflection of the larger humanity. And so a Jamaican writer writing in a truthful way will write a truth as truthful as a Nigerian writer or Yugoslavian writer. We don't have Yugoslavia anymore. The Serbian writer or anybody, you know.
Do you know an East African writer, Somalian writer named Narudin Farah?
Love Farah, man. Secrets.
So do I.
Oh, God. Absolutely. Books like Secrets. Oh, and he has a lot of sex in his books.
Yeah. A lot of mysticism.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of pre-Christian spookiness.
Sure.
Mystery.
But Colin found the sex.
Yeah, but I found the sex. No, Farah is a brilliant writer. And what one of the things that I admire about Farah is an African writer who made his career in writer. Farah didn't leave. You know, he went to Nigeria.
He's been in political trouble.
Right. But he stayed in that region. He stayed in Africa and worked in Africa and, you know, has achieved international acclaim. You know, I mean, we still have to leave the Caribbean if we want to be writers because the publishers here don't support us. They suck.
Are you listening, publishers? This is Tell Me About It. Thank you for joining us. Good morning. Welcome.
Good night. Yes, I think you guys have a very interesting program. I love reading, but I'm not really into novels. I'd like you guys to give me like a top 10 list of novels that maybe I'd be very interested in.
Well, Emily started with Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice. You can't go wrong.
You want necessarily Caribbean books, Virgin, or just books?
Well, period. Just like interesting novels.
Interesting. I mean, what kind of stuff you like to read?
Well, I usually like reading like facts, like you know, computer books,
right.
Book of facts, statistics,
right.
You know, world information, news. I spend hours.
All right. Okay. You know? My friend. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Hello, caller.
Yes.
Okay. Here you are. Pen and pencil ready?
Yes.
I think you should read Miguel Street by V.S. Naipaul.
Miguel.
I think you should read The Wide Sargasso Sea by Gene Rees.
The White?
Wide Sargasso Sea by Gene Rees. I think you should read The True History of Paradise by Margaret Cesare Thompson. I think you should read Crick Crack by Edwige Danticat.
Mm.
Crick Crack,
yeah. K-R-I-K, K-R-A-K. I think you should read Drown by Juno Diaz. I think you should also read The Hills Were Joyful Together by Roger Mays. I think you should also read, if you like a book that's exciting, mm-hmm. you should read The Chase.
The Chase.
The Chase by Alejo, A-L-E-J-O, Carpentier, C-A-R-P-E-N-T-I-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should read Texaco, like the gas station,
uh-huh.
by Patrick Chamoiseau, C-H-A-M-O-I-S-E-A-U. And my children need to go to university at some point, so you should buy my book, Waiting in Vain.
Waiting in Vain
by Colin Jada.
Okay.
And I think you should get yourself the Penguin Book of Caribbean Short Stories.
The Penguin Book
of Caribbean Short Stories. And you absolutely must read, get... It's not a novel, but it's a book of poems, The Arrivance by Kamau Brathwaite.
Hmm.
Okay, I think I've heard about that.
Yeah, man.
And you should get a CD called Woman of My Dreams by our guest Dingo.
Okay.
Definitely.
Dingo, I wish you'd... That's a tremendously valuable list, and I've written it all down, Colin. Thank you. I've read a few of them, and I'll read the rest.
Yes.
Dingo, give us the...
Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. Dingo, give us the spoken word top three that we all ought to take home.
I don't know the titles. There's one Muta Hasbro sitting on the wall, watch you or watch me.
Oh, that's from Outcry. The album is Outcry.
Yeah.
Long, long time. I sit up on the wall, I watch him, I watch me.
Yeah. And there's one with Dirty Tough from Louis Benin.
Okay.
There's another piece from Amina which I really, really love about a woman with a television knob in her hand, but I can't remember. I don't know the title of that one either.
But you find these in record stores?
You should be able to find. I wonder what Louise Bennett's would be on. Louise would be probably written.
Yes, there's some Louise Bennett on CD now.
They have them on CD as well.
And what about Linton Kwesi Johnson's Dreadbeat and Blood? Not bad.
Yeah, man. Who else do I know? There's a. Off the top of my head is hard, but if it come to me, I
keep thinking about
it. Short one out.
You know, we're running out of time as we always do, but I just wanted to ask, especially you, Colin, what do we make of V.S. Naipaul now that he has gotten the crown of heaven in the form of the Nobel Prize? He is still an enormously controversial figure. I'm glad you mentioned Miguel Street. I've been reading A House for Mr. Biswas, mm-hmm. which is all from, you know, both from sort of early Naipaul. What do Jamaicans think about Brother Vidya?
I think that the average Jamaican doesn't think about Naipaul. But I think to the extent that we do, I think that, you know, Naipaul has earned a very bad name in the Caribbean.
And just why?
Because Naipaul, in one of his nonfiction works, said that, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, nothing has ever been created in the Caribbean, nothing ever will. And I forgive Naipaul for that statement because he had said it before the arrival of reggae. right? And I think that, you know, Naipaul, you know, has written some works that to many black people seem racist. But I think also the fact that Naipaul isn't a political champion of the region has hurt our feelings because he's a local boy done good. But I think that when he won, we were all grateful, because whether or not Naipaul chooses to identify with the region or not, he was born here, he lived here. His earliest work, such as Miguel Street, The Suffrage of Elvira, Mystic Masseur, House of Mr. Biz was set here. You know, he's a Caribbean man and a genius. And we can't, like, you know, all geniuses are not nice people. Miles Davis wasn't a nice guy.
Neither was Tolstoy. you're an awfully nice guy, Colin Chatter. And I want to thank you very much for your books and for your joining us. I also want to thank Richard Dingwall, known as Dingo, for reciting his work on our program. Tomorrow night we're going to talk about music, about reggae, we're going to try to get our arms around 30 years of Jamaican popular music that's transformed world music and look ahead into the future of the music. We'll be back tomorrow night, God willing, at 12:30. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to Roger, our producer. Thanks to Emily for giving us this space. Thanks to Ben Walker for joining me from Boston. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you.